This is an interview with Mrs. Hendricks for the Youngstown State University Westlake Terrace Oral History Project by Lisa Calabrese on 9 December 1985 at 734 Mineral Springs Avenue at approximately 2:30 p.m.
I have to know, you know, while you're going to ask certain things, so I'll just have to wait until you ask, you know.
Well, anything that you'd like to add while I'm asking them, fine.
Okay, well, why don't we just practice a little bit before you do the taping and see what you want.
Oh, well, this, whatever we're going to discuss will be right on the tape then. Just to get started, just tell me a little bit about yourself and, you know, your origins, you know, your work, that type of thing, just to get started.
Well, you know, I wasn't a native up here at all. You know, I married and came into the area. So, you know, I've only been, I came into the area in 41. I came into the area in 32. I have to stop and think when I came into the area. 31. I guess it was September 31 I came into the area. So I'd have to go back to then.
Okay, fine. You know, where you were born, that type of thing.
Oh. Well, do you want me to say who I am?
Yeah, yeah, sure. Fine. Fine.
Okay. Are you ready then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My name is Mrs. Oscar Hendricks. I signed my name as Gertrude E. Hendricks. And my nickname is Peg. So people know me as Peg, they know me as Mrs. Oscar, and they know me as Gertrude. But most of my friends call me Peg, which is my nickname. Somebody asked me how did I get that nickname, and it's rather interesting because my name was Gertrude Elizabeth Potter before I was married, and the initials backwards spelled Peg, so I went by the name of Peggy Potter until I changed it to Peggy Hendricks. So that is the origin of names that is always confusing people. Well, I came into the area after having had my 2 degrees from Ohio State. I had a degree in home economics in 1928 and then my master's in child development for education in 1931. And I was married during that time, and then I married Oscar Hendricks, who was also a graduate of Ohio State, and was in the Depression years. And so help me, there was one teaching job available in the Mahoney County school system, and my husband got it. And it was a good thing because we had a child on the way and we needed the money. Then he was here for a number of years. That is, he taught at Fitch for 2 years, and then he went to East High. And while he was at East High, one morning he went to school and he had a heart attack, and that was the end of Oscar. So then I was thrown on my own to raise 2 children by myself, but I had my education, which was great. And the Depression was deep. People didn't have jobs, but there was some WPA work. And fortunately, I could get an assistantship as one of the assistant supervisors in WPA on a sewing project, because I had my home economics background. So I immediately went to work, and this happened in March, and I was at work at Thanksgiving time. And then they needed a district supervisor of WPA projects, women's projects in Warren, and they needed one in Cleveland, they wanted one in Cincinnati. And I was interviewed, but I chose the one in Warren because I thought I could manage it with my 2 children here, and because I had a woman that could help me. So I went to Warren. I went there in February, and then that same year they needed a state home economic supervisor out of Columbus, and I went there in September. So I worked from February until September out of Warren, covering the 5 upper counties, that is Ashtabula, Trumbull, Portage, Mahoning, and Columbiana was in on this one too. So we worked on sewing projects. We had housekeeping aid projects. We had school lunch projects. School lunches we still have. The housekeeping aids we still have, but they are in a little different form. But it was the same basic kind of thing where we went and did homework, that is housework for people who were physically unable to do it. You have that now out of the welfare department. There is a department called home visitations, and there's also with the visiting nurses. They also have a program wherein they go out and help for the supplementary. So it's taken several different forms through the years. But at that time, we just had workers who needed employment, and they worked for a living wage, and they were sent into homes to work. And that was the housekeeping aides, the school lunches, where we had women who prepared the food, that sort of thing. And then as supervisor of women's professional projects, I had all the records projects, too, where we were copying records that were in the courthouses. They were becoming so brittle that as the attorneys used them, they were afraid that they would be discontinued and they wouldn't be able to go in, so they decided that if we copied those records, then they'd put the original records in a vault and preserve those and leave the copies for the attorneys to use and only refer to them if they needed. There was a big legal simple trial or anything like that, they'd go back to them. And we unearthed Brigham Young's first marriage license is in the Chardon Courthouse. And, of course, you know, he built, what is that place up there near Chardon? I had to think of the house that he first built that was all pegged and so forth. Mm-hmm. And it still stands. I'll come back to it. I don't recall all these things as rapidly as I used to. Anyhow, of course, then he moved west. But I was there until, as I said, until September. And that, my folks lived in outside of Columbus, about 7 miles from the central part of the state, on a dairy farm. And it was great that I could go there because they could help me with my small children, because one child was a year old and the other was 2 and a half, and so they were pretty small. And they were really too small for, we didn't have the nurseries that we have today. And so they helped me during that period. And I lived at home and worked from there because it was easy to commute. So I was there, WPA was in its prime. Just telling people today, my first assignment as the state supervisor of women's projects was to try and get a diversified program for 4,000 women that were sewing on domestic sewing machines in the Coliseum up there, because they were producing more garments than they needed. And the other thing was that the purpose of WPA was to give them enough training so they could go back into industry. And certainly there wasn't an industry on a home sewing machine, but there would be industry on power machines. So what we did was try to establish a unit with power machines, of which we did, and we had a diversified program because we had to find employment for all these other women. So I had to find other kinds of projects. So they sent me to Milwaukee, where there were 900 women sewing under, or 900 people working under one roof with a diversified program. So I went up there and I was there a week, and I was trying to think of what I could do in Ohio that would be similar. So I came back and wrote several different kinds of projects, of which some of them were institutional projects, because we felt the very definite need, and they had experimented some with them. So we came back and we wrote these, and but we had difficulty getting them approved because we had this huge labor supply. You're just amazed of the people with the training and skills that were wanting a job just to put bread and butter on their table. And at that time, $71 a month was all that they paid. That was the top wage in industrial areas for a family of four. So we worked with them, and we wanted to put them on these projects. And my biggest problem was trying to get the project approved by the Bureau of Budgets. Now, I rewrote a project for the mental hospital there in Columbus. And Dr. Bateman, who was the director of the place, has helped us with it. And they keep writing back, you know, we need more professional people, more of this. And all Dr. Bateman was doing was trying to, all we wanted to do was to match skills. For example, if there was an artist that was having emotional problems in the institution. We wanted to find an artist and sign that artist to the project so that they could relate, and that all we were trying to do was find summer skills. Well, of course, the psychologists and the other people felt very definitely they couldn't operate him unless we had that kind of a skill. Well, that isn't what we really were searching for. We needed some of that, but we certainly didn't need all those workers. And finally, Eleanor Roosevelt came out to be in Columbus, and that she wrote ahead and said she'd like to see some projects, WPA projects. Well, because she asked to see what we could do for women, that fell to my start to be her hostess. So I thought, well, we'll show her the mental hospital, and we'll show her the one we did for the Blind Society, because if you're a blind person and you've never seen in your life, you have no idea about proportions. I mean, a chicken and a cow is the same thing, unless you really could have felt and seen them. So we decided we'd get scale models so they could get some idea about proportions and size for the person who had not seen. And that was the biggest problem that we were trying to face. And then we had an institutional project where we trained women to work in homes and be managers, because there was an outlet for a woman who could go into a home and take over and do the managing, doing the buying, and take care of the house. In other words, some people were calling it maid service at that time. And of course, we called it maid service, but we also called it institutional training, because we wanted to do more than what maids had done in the past. Like cleaning was the concept. We wanted the managerial part, which we trained for. She wanted to see that, and so while when she came, I was scared to death, because I was told that she was very punctual and she had to move on and I should time everything. Well, believe you me, I went for the projects that we were going to see, and I drove three different times during the hours in which we were going to be doing this, because it would be from 2 to 4. And I thought, well, I'll drive this and have it. So I knew exactly how long we could spend at each project when we had to move on. She was wonderful. When I met her, it was just like I had met a person who's just like no shoe, you know. Mm-hmm. She just was terrific. She said to me, "Now, my dear, I just get so interested and involved in these projects. If you just touch my arm, I'll know it's time to move on." Well, it was great. I just moved on and had a great day with her. While we were riding along with her, and she was sharing her families and what her sons were doing and about her mother-in-law and all that sort of thing, we mentioned the fact that we had a project where students could live at Ohio State University for room and board for $3 a week. They lived under the stadium. We built dorms and underneath the stadium. Well, she said, "Oh, I want to see it." Well, we said, "If you have to be back, you know, certain time, there won't be time." But she said, "Oh, Tommy can wait." She said, "I must see those." So we phoned ahead and away we went, because we had this caravan with us, you know, three cars, but we didn't end up with three cars. I had several cars following us. They all wanted to be a part of it. Well, anyhow, we went up to the dorm, and she saw a student with, they had this simple desk, you know, with the gooseneck lamps. That's all they had for studies. But there was a student in there studying, and she had to go and talk to him. Mm-hmm. She was interested in talking to the people. Even when she went on these projects, any of them, she was very courteous to my supervisors. But she went out and talked to the people and asked them, you know, what it meant, who was it back home, and that sort of thing. She was really his ambassador. She knew what was going on. She knew how the people went and where it helped them or didn't help them. And so she went over and talked to this chap, and I still see him just get up about three different times. What a surprise, because he was had his back to us, you know. He didn't even know we were around. And of course, all the little boys were out playing football in the area, and she autographed, took time out and autographed every football. where she went back. She was late in getting back, but it didn't seem to bother her because she wanted to see what she wanted. Well, anyhow, make a long story short, when she went back, she talked to the people in the Bureau of Budgets, and I then got approval for a whole year. But up until that time, I'd only had 3 months approval. We just run from mouth to mouth, you know, 3 months, and then we'd hope we get another 3 months. We were just getting started. But it really helped us a great deal, and I appreciated that a great deal with her. I think those are some of the highlights. I wish I had, I have a book, a memory book, that I have a lot of poetry that I collected from different times, because when the lights came on, what it meant to the people to be able to have electricity turn on, the gas turned back on, because they were just getting along with whatever they could, coal or wood or whatnot for heat. So there were a lot of poetry written from the bottom of the heart of what it meant to them, or when they started and got a job for the first time. There's one about what it meant to her when the social worker came out and decided that her father could go to work on the WPA and she had a job for him, and what it meant to the family. She wrote that in poetry, so I've got some of that, but I don't happen to have it here today. My son has it. I finally, in the last couple of years, tried to put some of this down together. My grandson starred me on it because he wrote my life, a history, and did a tape on me. Very similar, so if I can get a hold of it, I'll let you play it too and see if there's anything in it that you want. But anyhow, I went after WPA and I had all this experience, and I decided that I would like to get some rural experience with farm security. A very good friend of mine was director of it here in Ohio, and I thought Irene Wagamont could give me some more help in this. And she had an opening as a district supervisor up out of Mansfield. So I went with Farm Security, and Farm Security is where we made we made loans to low-income families, and they were basically chattel loans, things for animals or things for your house or that kind of thing. And sometime in return, we didn't put you in debt to the point that you couldn't pay. That's why they had in every county a home supervisor and a farm supervisor. And the home supervisor was the person who helped them with the budget and the planning and the canning and the sowing and the management of the house, because it really was home management, and the buying and that sort of thing. And then the farm supervisor was to rotate the crops and get enough seeds and that kind of thing so that the farm would be producing enough to bring in the income that was necessary in that home. Now, we would not loan you money beyond what you could repay, because that wasn't going to be fair either, put you in deeper and deeper. You had to feel that you were successful. So the loans were based on a farm plan and a home plan, which was put together. And when we put together what they could produce on their own home and what they had to buy, then we could get the difference and see how much they could afford to borrow and what they could afford to pay back. So the loans were based on what they could pay, return payment. Also, we had some very good farmers who were what we call tenant farmers. We purchased farms for them because they were able to manage, but they had no money. And those were purchased at 4% interest, very low interest, and the others were around 5%. And I said several times I was on the wrong side of the desk. I should have been buying a farm instead of having selling them for people. But there were a number of people that bought farms that, well, they were anywhere from 75 to 125 or 150 acres. We had a few larger than that, but that seemed to be about what would support the average family at that time. Now, it wouldn't do it today with the mechanism that you have to have on the farms and all, but it would at that time because they were depending on horses and some tractors, but not too many tractors. And what tractors they had sometimes were owned jointly rather than by one person. So that program was an interesting program, and Interesting enough, nationally, it lost less than 1% for in a total program, so you can see it's pretty well supervised. Because they, even after they bought the farms, they were under supervision every year. We it was our responsibility to see that they paid, and that they, and if they weren't paying, why they weren't paying, and improve their practices so they could. So that program was it. I worked then. I went from Mansfield, which were the about six upper counties: Bucyrus, Richland, Crawford, Seneca, over to Sandusky County, and down. There were six in that area, in that block. And I worked as a home supervisor. That was after I went first to Belle Fountain, though. I went to Belle Fountain the first, my first assignment. And I had 300 cases to see in a month. And I didn't see how I could see 300 families in 1 month. It was impossible. So that's when the farm supervisor and I conceived the idea that if we could find 12 good farmers, and we could spot them out over the county, which was Logan County, that we could meet and they could get 12 good borrowers that lived around them, that we could then pyramid that and get 144, you see, that we could see through a group kind of thing. And then try to pick up between us the others, but it was run as fast as you could to see them all. It just was practically impossible. It was a big, heavy load. But the group work is really the one that gave us a great deal of recognition, and also we worked out a medical plan, probably some of the first in the country in a medical plan, because we got the medical people in the county together to see what they would do, what the lowest price was that they would do the various operations for. You know, a medical, a house call, that kind of thing. Also, the dentists were in on it, what they would do as far as teeth are concerned, and the oculus. We had the whole bit in the county that decided that they were going to do something about the health in that area. And so Logan County was pioneering in that whole health field way back, and that would have been in 38, 39 to 40, in that period of time. And we set up what they called a paying scale. And then we had some money that was given to us that we could help those who had no money at all for that kind of thing. We had some, but in turn, they had to do something extra for us to give them that kind of money. And so there were some of them that got glasses and that sort of thing free, but for that free service, they had to do something additional in their own home practices or farm practices for it. That was probably the beginning. As I said, in the group, we found out a good many things. And the biggest thing, I think, in the group work that we found was that they would help one another, which was great. You'd find somebody that needed something, they'd say, oh, we have some of that, we'll help you. Or, like, one woman became ill at the time of that they were butchering up. They had their own meat, you know, and so they butchered that time, and she was ill. She had flea bites and had to be in the bed, so all her group came in, including ourselves, pardon me, and we brought our pressure cookers, and we canned 90 quarts of meat that one day for, which was great, you know. It was the stuff that had to be canned, the stuff that could be cured, that was cured otherwise. But they helped one another. Mm-hmm. And often the pressure cookers were bought between two families or three families. And then they take turns to help one another. So there was a lot of give and take in those. And I can remember one family in particular, and I think I still have that picture. I have it tucked away. There was a man that was a Guernsey, thoroughbred herd of Guernseys. And his barn was tiled, it was clean, everything went to the Guernseys. When I went into the home, I had to pick my way to find my way to get through the porch and not fall in. The woman carried water from that barn to her house. There was no running water in the house, but they had it in the barn. Well, he came to meetings, and we got him into a group. And I used to watch old John, and I used to think, I wonder now what's going through his mind. He goes to meetings, and I don't think he heard much about what the farmers were saying, but he was really looking the houses over. Well, it came to his turn. They all took turns. And it was about his turn. There was one more to go, and then it was John's turn because everybody had had their turn. So he called me up one day and he said, Miss, I wish you'd come out. He said, I think our house needs a little attention and we're about ready to have one of those meetings. Well, we went out and with John's help, we got a pitcher pump in the kitchen and we got the kitchen done over and linoleum and painted, and they were all fixed up for the meeting. And he fixed the porch up so you could walk on and got new flooring. And I think he saw for the first time what other people's homes were like. I don't think he ever knew that his home was in such bad shape until he saw everybody else's. And I often wondered, that poor soul had a lot of health problems because of it. And I often wondered what happened to the family. But of course I moved on and went into the regional office of Indianapolis. And my purpose of going into the regional office was to establish or help other communities throughout the region, which was Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, Iowa, and Ohio, to set up these kinds of group meetings wherein people could share their experiences, plus cooperatives. And laws, I didn't know a thing about cooperative law, but I sure learned. And I learned a great deal from the guy who was in charge, and that was this home supervisor working there. And then the war broke out, and I can remember the regional director said, I can't go to Chicago. Would you go my place? Because he knew I had an educational background, too. I have a teaching background. Pardon me. He said, they're having a meeting, the commissioners of education, on child care centers. And he said, I wish you'd go and represent me. So I went. And I listened to those commissioners of education from those five states, and I heard them say, we have no problem. Well, I had been out and seen kids tied in all these mobile camps that they set up, trailers. I'd seen kids tied, you know, while they were trying to earn a living or get away to earn a dime. And they said they had no problem. I couldn't believe it. Well, I came back and Dr. Bowman, who was here in Youngstown at that time, superintendent of the schools, there was an opening here, and L.U. Hewlin was on the Board of Education, and he was our great uncle. And he said, why don't you come back to Youngstown? Well, I thought, I think maybe I will. And I came back, and there was one opening, and I interviewed, Dr. Bowman interviewed me, and I thought how much vision he had compared to having been there to those commissioners. And so before I got back to Indianapolis, I had a contract, which that brought me back to the Youngstown area. But I just felt that with the war on, I would land in Chicago and I'd have a reservation, but I'd go up and they'd say, we're sorry, but we've moved you to a little old podunk place, because with the armed forces, they had priority. And I was being bumped all the time, and I thought, I don't need to do this kind of thing. I've got a job. So I came here and took a $1,000 cut annually for salary, and I decided to settle down to teaching. And I taught at Ray, and then didn't teach that full year, but that during that time we established a housekeeper, we established first aid and home nursing in the school's curriculum. And I had Mr. Tier was my was the principal at that time, and he was excellent in terms of saying he wanted diversified programs. Well, I'd come for all my life. I've been working in diversified programs because, and I've been in this child care thing for a long time. And so he offered to, and we did that, and I guess it was in April of that year. I went to, that was in September I came, and I guess it was April, March or April, Bowman came up, and both Chair and Bowman, and offered me the job of going down to the board and setting up child care centers while the women were working in the war plants, because he'd written a project, and he'd need the supervisor. Well, I'd had all this government experience, and I'd had daycare and I've experienced this, because, gee, we set up all these daycare centers in the South in Missouri to get the women who were working in the cotton fields. They were taking the kids and leaving them in the corners, the fence corners, you know. Well, we took those and put them in daycare centers. So it was just the second life for me. I was doing the same thing. So I came back, and we did that, and I didn't finish that first year at RAND, but I did that, and we did that here in the Youngstown area. We had five centers. I was telling the people today, we were asking about it. We had five centers, and three of those centers never closed. They operate 24 hours a day, because in our area at that time was the mills, an industry of the kind. You see, they worked the churns. And so we had to, but we didn't, because of children, we didn't let them bring them in for three turns. If they were going out at midnight, they had to have them in by 7 o'clock at night so the children could have time to get to bed and then have a night's sleep. And then when they came off of the turn, then they pick them up in the morning. But we didn't keep them all the time. I mean, while they were working, we kept them. So we had children in and out of a center, and we had some for breakfast and some for lunch and some, and then some maybe next week the same child would be there for dinner in the evening. So the child rotated along with the parent, because we didn't want to replace the parent
right.
at any time. And we wanted the child in his home. And the only time, we only closed at Christmas time, and even one Christmas that we closed the night before, the police called me and said, we have three children that were found up there in the projects in the housing area, and they are without clothing. They just have some underwear on, and they're hovered behind a stove that has no heat in it. And so they brought the children in, and we took them to Christ Mission at that time. The Christ Mission was downtown, where I guess part of the post office is on where Christ Mission at one time was. And we called the supervisors there and told them the ages of their children, the approximate sizes, and they had all clothing ready, and they put on the children. And I had one supervisor and one teacher who had two children, and they both were in the armed forces, and they were out of country. Mm-hmm. And so they offered to take the three children, so they made Christmas for those three. Made Christmas for both of them, because it made Christmas for them, made Christmas for the children. Well, it happened that the mother came back, and she had left the children and gone to Cleveland, but she left them with an uncle who was alcoholic. And you see, he'd gone off and had himself a good time and forgot about the children. And it was a sad Christmas, I'm sure, for her, because she didn't have them, because I couldn't give them to her, you know. I didn't dare let her know where they were, because it was a court order. Mm-hmm. So then after that, I always felt badly about that she didn't get them, but I also felt it was good for us. It was a real teaching situation for my young children. Because as we picked them up to take them to this home, and I drove down through Federal Street, and at that time you could drive through, and they saw all the Christmas and the lights and all, and they were so thrilled with the things and was talking about Santa Claus. My kids came home and dug out all their toys and things and shared like nobody's business. I couldn't have told them to do this any different, but they came and did it on their own. So that was a real learning, sharing experience for all of us in the family. But there were just a lot of things that happened during those times, but was a real rewarding experience too, because we were helping mothers who wanted to work and whose fathers were in the service. And those, I think that went until, well, VE Day. I know VE came before VJ. Which came first, VE or VJ?
VE
came first. Well, VE came, and I know and down here at Monroe School, they were going to start kindergartens. See, the Youngstown system had been without kindergartens for 20 years prior to this time. They had closed them because they didn't have enough money, and so they've been for 20 years without kindergartens. Well, that's why I went through all of the buildings, and I with the custodians and all, we went out and found a lot of equipment that had just been stored. And see, at that time you couldn't buy it either because the war was on. So I even hired, in those days, a carpenter who did nothing but make equipment for me. The equipment for the centers, like tables and chairs and stuff like that, which we couldn't buy. You know, they'd say, I'm sorry, but everything's for the war effort. So what we supplemented as much as we could. And so we had the centers pretty well set up. And when VE came day, we were dividing the one down at Monroe School because they were going to start kindergartens that year. And I went up, I thought, well, next morning I better make sure because they don't want to start and divide that room all up. And because with the VE day, certainly the war effort's going to be going down. There'll be less women employed. Well, I went down the next morning before the carpenters came on, the men. I was there when they came to work at 7. And the supervisor was there, of our maintenance and the board. And I said, Mac, do you think we ought to go ahead with that division? And he said, oh, Hendricks, he said, they pay me to put it up and they'll pay me to take it down. So, well, the good old Irishman was probably right. We let him put it up, but eventually it came down a bit later on, a couple of years. But we operate for several times for about, oh, maybe, VEJ was in, was it August?
VE was April, I think.
April. Well, then it was until the following April, March or April, before we simply closed up. So we had this much time in between of phasing out the program. So it took a while to phase it out. But then, as far as equipment's concerned and all, the kindergartens were great. They just stepped in and took over the equipment. So it was good for the Youngstown schools that we did this. The programs at that time during the war effort were all under the State Department of Education, and we had to have certified teachers. And we had to have, and they had to be people who could work with young children. I mean, I couldn't just take somebody who, like a grandmother who maybe had raised 10 of her own, you know, but I had to have state certification in order to pay them. And that was a good program because we had standards. And we found a lot of scabs, though. I know one time, right out there in the Cleveland area, I followed, my supervisor said there's some children being sent to the playground because we had operated 9 extension centers, too, for the older children, which were called extended, and that would be summertime, and then after school and before school. And one was over here at Cleveland School. They wanted to know why these children were coming, said they were falling asleep and they were babies. So I said, well, okay, so they went home about a certain time. So I decided one day I'd follow them home, see where they went. And I found out where they went. So then a couple of days later, I went to this place to enroll a child. And I asked the woman about the place, and it was a small place. And I asked if she's certified. She said yes, there was a certification hanging back there on the wall. So I went back and looked at it. Mm-hmm. Well, she hadn't been certified for several years. And she'd only been certified for 3 children. And here she was holding, having a mob of them.
Oh, boy.
I think there were 8 or 9 in that center. So we reported it because that was what we were supposed to do. But these were kinds of things that were happening. Children were exploited if you didn't care. And I think even today now, that I felt badly when the certification of daycare centers went from education to welfare. Because there are different standards of which they were holding to. And of course, it makes it possible for some people to have employment wouldn't otherwise, but it makes it hard to hold for certified centers. And even now, there are a lot of places that operate that are not certified. And they should be certified, as far as I'm concerned. But as I said, the certification standards are not as broad. I hope the time will come when they'll go back to education. But, you know, what the people won't want to vote for what we have. But I'm concerned about the early childhood education. I really am. I'm really concerned.
Yeah, it's very important. It's the formative years.
Yeah, the formative years are the most important, and yet we spend all this kind of money correcting things that if we'd been at earlier, we wouldn't have had them.
Right.
And, of course, I'm a early childhood education person. But you might be interested that I've been director of the Family Life Education Program for the Youngstown Schools, and that program started then in 48. And then I spent 25 years on that program. And that was the kind of program where we went into schools and we had parent meetings, and it was basically a child development program. The parents didn't have to come, but it was offered to them, and we'd have discussions about various problems that parents would have at that school age level, because I operated at the elementary level and the junior high and senior high level. Now, my greatest work was the elementary level, where parents were eager to learn, and we did do quite a few programs, even at the preschool level, in the early days, where people who had their first children would come. That program, I think, was our principals liked it, because I know many of our principals would sit in the discussions, because as people in a group discuss problems, they discuss feelings, mm-hmm. and a lot comes out that is never said at any other time. And they said that they found a great deal of understanding about those families in their schools by just listening to those meetings, whether there was dissension or hardships or what their attitudes were or whether they really were behind the children or they tried to help them, this kind of thing. It all sort of came out. And so we had those in our various schools, and that was a big program until about the last year, which, see, I've been retired now 13 years. The last couple of years, we saw a real inroad of women going to work. See, way back when I'm coming back again, we wanted to keep one of those child care centers that we had after the war open. And the Junior League was willing to give us money for a while to get it established, because that's the purpose of Junior League. But Andrew Fleming, who was director of the community chest at that time, said, no way, the woman's place is in the home. And little did the women go back, you know, they got a taste of it, and a lot of them never went back, they've always worked. So it was too bad, but we lost a little ground there. But then, on top of all this now, the things go and come in this child development movement. Even after we had all those programs during the war, and then we came out into these family life programs, we were able to get another grant the last 5 years of my service. And I graduated in 72. I mean, I retired in 72. We were able to get a program which helped us with the very low income people. And it was in that were five phases. One was in the foods, preparation, the buying and the preparation of foods and the use of low income, low price foods. Another one was in clothing and construction, reconstruction, new garments and this kind of thing, plus bimanship. And then we had another phase who that was in sort of a recreational area. I mean, things that you can do in your own home or with your children, that kind of thing, and or what to do on vacations and so forth. Then we had this one on these centers, these child care centers. And so we had in this child care center, did I name all of it? Oh, and we had another one in crafts. It is things that you can, we tried in the craft area, not the things that you have so much today, but because you have,
right.
It's a very expensive kind of program. But what you can make out of nothing that would make your house more attractive was the basis of our craft program. And then we were offered a opportunity to do a pilot project with the U.S. Office of Education in the area of child care and child development. And that was a forerunner of the child care that you find that the government is giving so money to now. But we wrote, just let it ring. In this child care, we wrote the pilot project, and we had to write a curriculum that you should use in a preschool area. And in this curriculum, we set it up as a training kind of thing, that we would train people to do it. And the question was, what kind of textbook would you use? Well, I called my friend at Ohio State who was head of the town, and I said, what about Reed's textbooks for child development? Oh, that's a college textbook. Well, I needed one, and I knew Reed well enough, and I thought I could interpret Reed to be applicable to this. So anyhow, we went ahead, and we did use Reed, because we had to have a textbook. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, if you use it, my recommendation. I said, well, I won't say that you recommended it. I'll say I did it then. And so Sister Jerome and I worked on it together because I felt the parochial schools ought to be involved in it as well as the public schools. And so Sister Jerome and I worked on it and submitted it. And then we...
What year was this?
I would have to look back and see. I probably have a copy of it someplace. It was probably in 72, 60, or anywhere from 66 to 68. I'm not quite sure on that. Anyhow, the U.S. office was asking for it. I'll have to try and look that up for you to document it. The U.S. office was interested in because they could see that this was a coming thing, and they wanted to have some say about what kind of training people had to have, and then what went on in the centers once you had the children. And that was the important part. And so that's why we set up the curriculum. I mean, what are you going to teach these children at this age level? And what kind of training should the teachers have prior to this? So we had the two kinds of things that we were working on. We were teachers, and then we worked on the curriculum that you should have in every daycare center. And we had the pilot project for the U.S. office now. Yeah, light went out. Did the thing go off too?
No, it's still on.
Okay. So we had the pilot project for the U.S. office. It ran a 16-week course, and I hired a girl she came out of Chicago who had a great deal of experience in daycare and who had the educational background. She had her master's in the area beside all this experience in daycare. Now, I had some daycare like in the war, but I'd not had the daycare of 12 hours a day kind of thing, which that was established in the larger cities. So she came, and also I got a girl from that was a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania who had her master's in child development, and she was the assistant. So the two of them followed through on our curriculum that we set up. And we made some modifications, and of course that was the purpose of having a pilot project. And we had to document the whole thing in order to get it be a pilot project. So we were the pilot project for the U.S. Office of Education, which then came out and wrote their bulletins on what daycare centers should have from our experiences. And it was, then we had the exchange of experiences afterwards on this. So I always felt good about having been a pilot in that. Of course, one of the rewards I got from doing all that was Ohio State University gave me one of their centennial awards when they had their 100th anniversary for doing pilot work in that area.
Very nice.
In child care centers on the national basis. So I was always pleased with that kind of recognition that they got, from it. But I think was a contribution that we made very definitely to community, and I still am interested in them. I still do what I can for them. I've taught several courses. Even after I retired, I went over to Malone College, who was setting up courses for teachers, because they did go into certification, and it went into, as I said, came out of the Social Welfare Department in Columbus, but they still had to train their people. And so we had several courses that we set up for how you work with children in those areas, which helped them get better certifications. So we worked in that area even after I retired.
You moved back to Youngstown in 41, you said.
Yeah, I came back to Youngstown in 41.
What was...
42. I started teaching at Rand in 42.
What was Youngstown like during those war years?
Well, it was great because everybody was working, as you know, and it wasn't like it is today. I can remember, we went through some strikes too since that time, when I was, when the people struck for higher wages, and we went out and wrote all kinds of welfare for, checks for them for the time being until they got on their feet when they first struck. And that was after that period, though. And I can remember the women saying, oh, those men will just go back to work. We won't try. And the men used to talk about how dirty their houses got and everything, and the horses and all this stuff. Boy, they used to pray for the thing to get dirty anymore just get some smoke. We'll never talk about smoke again. Well, I think there are a lot of people feel that way today, but they'll never come back now.
Yeah.
Never. I go by those mills where I used to go and see nothing but just old broken down steel buildings, and some of them are completely removed. It's pretty sad.
Yes, it is.
But everybody was working, and of course, there was East Federal Street, with all that downtown business is completely gone. We had East Federal and West Federal, and there was a lot of business downtown, loads of it.
Do you remember anything about the Westlake Terrace homes, the projects over there on Federal Street?
Yeah. What do you want to know about them? We did some work there, too, early. We had two, during the war now, in those two areas, we had, at that time, Westlake was an upper project and lower project, and the upper project was white and the lower project was black. And we had one center in the white area and one center in the black area, but we didn't make any difference. The children could go to any school, but just by the being black and being white tended to segregate itself.
Right.
And I had black instructors though in the dark and the black center, and I had white in the white center.
They had the same qualifications though.
Yes. They had to be. The qualifications had to be there because I couldn't pay them. Couldn't put them on payroll. We had to get, it's just like a teacher today, she can't teach unless she has a certification. And that was what we had to get there. Now some of them we got temporary certifications because they hadn't been in school for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but the state would give them temporary certifications. But we had constant training programs. I mean, every week there was a training program that I held, a two-hour training program. Because working with small children, if they hadn't worked with the ones that were a year old or babies, and our early childhood education at first only took into early kindergarten, then we had pre-kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
So it took some additional training at that time. Now, and in the projects, the housing ones, I remember several doing different projects up there. In our family life work, we tried to help them to improve their homes, and we had group works up there too, established groups And I can remember Mr. Media saying one time that some of the people up there needed drapes, and we agreed that he would buy the material if I teach them how to make the drapes, but they had to make their own, and he would buy the material. And so he found a place that he'd get material, and so one of the last group projects was for them to band together to improve their homes, and if they wanted to make drapes, they did it. In some places they didn't make drapes, they just, it was a cleaning one, because in the housing area they had problems of getting people to use the right things to clean with, you know. Maybe they hadn't lived in a home like that before. Mm-hmm. And you had linoleum floors and you had blocks, and they had to be treated a little different. And they had the countertops, and they had to be a little different than the wooden ones maybe that some of them were used to. And the walls, washing the walls. If they washed them right, they were grand. But if you didn't wash the walls right, you'd make an awful mess out of them. And so we would have each, in the groups, one of the members of the group would have the wall washing project, and another would have the floors or the draperies, another one. So they'd divide up so that somebody in that group would have one of those projects. Mm-hmm. And I can remember the drapery ones, why they wanted drapes, and I asked them, how come they wanted to cover up all the windows? Because they only had that one window for light anyway. And they said, well, miss, you don't live up here, because everybody comes and peeks in your windows, so you have to have heavy drapes to cut out so the light. And, you know, I never realized that until I was in that area, but it was certainly true. Mm-hmm. It was so true. They needed, like, blinds, but they didn't have blinds, yeah. So you have to have drapes that you could pull.
Everybody was so close together.
They lived so close. Mm-hmm. You see, I had not had that experience of group living, mm-hmm. you know, and of course, a lot of us now in the condos are having that kind of experience,
yes.
But we never had it before. It was just people in housing. And they hadn't had it before, and they were finding it very difficult, and they were also finding it difficult for people not coming into their kitchens and sitting and spending an awful lot of time, and sometimes eating the food that they needed themselves, because other people come in and for breakfast.
Right.
What are you going to do? You don't want to be unkind to them. So there was a lot of went on in those groups that we shared, and so then that got ideas out into, and we did it in terms of sections in the project. Mm-hmm. You know, there would be a group in this section, another one. They were harder to do, much harder to do than the schools, much harder. Because in schools you'd have the principals and your PTAs and all to help you. But up there you only had the housing authorities that could help you, and those that wanted to do it. And there were a lot who didn't. And of course today it's quite different,
Sure.
Just entirely different. You just don't take people out of poor areas and put them in better areas without giving them some help. If there just has to be some help and training of how you take care of things. And that was what we were doing at that time. And of course, no longer are those programs available. So
now you worked with Westlake during the 50s, 40s?
That would be in the 50s. I'd have to go back, you know, look at some of the records. I've got reports of everything I've done since I've been in this area, so.
That's good.
I've kept definite detailed records of all the groups, and I have them down the basement. I wanted somebody. I went to the university hoping that somebody might want to take and work on a doctorate or at least a master's in the area, but it never worked out. It never seemed to be able to get a program together. I remember the, because I taught for a while, when the war came on and the boys came back, they had something like 200 signed up for the course in marriage up there at the university. Well, Mary B. Smith couldn't take care of all of them, and so she asked some of the rest of us that had been in the field who'd had it, see, my background was that. To help, and so I started to help, and I taught there every year in an evening along with my regular job, and I taught 3 years even after I retired.
Oh my.
Of course, in marriage psychology was the psych department.
Psych of marriage. Uh-huh. Yeah, I took that course.
But I taught it very differently than some of them taught it, because I taught it from the standpoint of what it means, you know. I used to have Don Tucker was an attorney. He was a young attorney getting started, and he had specialized when he'd gone into marriage. They'd taken some special work in laws of marriage and so forth. And Don helped me. He's now with commercial sharing course. He didn't have time to do that, but he was very helpful in saying, you know, what are your legal responsibilities as soon as you say I do? Two little words and involves you into a good many things of which you have never even thought about. And then we would have people in insurance who would give us some real help. That is the man that wrote independent insurance, who wrote all kinds of insurance. I mean, what you needed in terms of protection. And I can remember Mr. Kidston used to love to come. He was president of Dollar Bank. He's now deceased. And he used to love to come up there. He never had kids of his own, but he just loved them. And he'd come up and tell them about the first dollar he ever made, the 50 cents he made in his first job years ago. And he would take 10 cents of it and put it away for Irv Kidston because he earned it. And that's the way you've got it. You begin to save, but you also spend, because Irv Kidston earned the 50 cents, so he earned the dime that he should spend any way he wanted to. I used to enjoy him so much, and the kids just loved him. Of course, he gave them some real sound financial experiences, and I think many of them, I see some of them here now today, once in a while, run into them, and we talk about some of those courses we had years ago, how it went into effect.
Do you have anything else you'd like to add about Wesley in particular?
Except I haven't been in there for a long time, and I don't know how to be like. I did go back. When we had that special money for the last 5 years, we did another phase of it. I forgot to tell you, was upholstery. And I had in Kimmelbrook was a girl in my parent group who had worked in an upholstery factory in the Deep South, and she had helped us a couple times with the little group. So I got a hold of Hattie and she was certified just for that, and she had taught upholstery, and she still. Well, the program wound up this year, finally, at the last of it, and she's doing her own upholstery now, but she's taught even after I retired. But she taught upholstery, and we did upholstery in the projects up there. And laws and behold, this week when I was out, we were doing nutrition products, and we were going around to suppliers, because I'm on the nutrition program where we feed these elderly people. Well, we were going out, we went on a bid basis, and we were going out and see the suppliers and what they were offering. And Northside had bid on the thing, and so help me, wasn't there a girl up there who recognized me immediately, but I would have never have known her, because her name was Madison, and she was just a little tiny girl that came with her mama when they lived in the projects while their house was being built. They were building up in Liberty when their house was being built. And so help me, she remembered me. And of course, as I looked at her today, she's spit an image of her mom. Her mom is now deceased. But they would bring the kids, and the kids would be real quiet. They didn't bother, and they played. Well, it made no difference to us. And we had that project in one of the washrooms that Mr. Media turned over, and it was just, we left our equipment there, and they left their chairs, and they'd bring their chairs in, and Hattie would teach them, and they'd buy their own materials. And I was able to get the materials from Mr. Jewell up here on the Jewell upholstery, and his wife was interested in welfare things, and he became interested, and he gave us a lot of stuff at a very reasonable price. You know, they'd come in and make their selections, but he'd pull out from under the counter odd pieces that he'd have, and it was practically no money on it. And they would make their selection, what they wanted for their chairs, and then they'd take it back. And we didn't help them with the money. They had their own money for it. Once in a while, I would stake somebody, but I knew they'd give it back to me. They didn't, wasn't that much. But basically, they did their own things, and they learned how to do it. And some of them are still upholstery. But that, there was one of those projects there in Westlake, and I don't remember now which one of the washrooms, but we did it. And, of course, a Lexington settlement's up there in that project. And yeah. we always did work there. Okay. We always had classes up there that we held. I helped them with those, and also worked with the youth. Mm-hmm. And of course, that center, Lexington Settlement, was the white center at that time when the daycare was on during the war.
Oh, I see.
That was all white.
I see.
But now the whole thing is integrated. It was integrated after the war. And I think probably most of it's black. I know Ro Carter's up there now, and she's a grand gal. She really knows what it's all about. She was born and raised in that. Do you know Ro at all?
Matter of fact, we've interviewed her, yeah.
You've interviewed her?
Yeah.
Well, Ro's a good gal. She knows that area. She knows all the pimps. She knows everybody. And she calls them. I'll tell you, they don't get away with murder with her. And she's good. We helped Ro. She was interested in when we had the problems at the Board of Education of have better understanding of black people and their problems, and she helped us with that. And we had several get-togethers where we had weekends. We just talked in terms about people and feelings and working and so forth. And Ro was with us, and I learned to know Ro real well, and I respect her very much. We helped her get her degree then. Some of us banded mm-hmm. together and saw that there was some money to help her get started. And then she went away and got her degree, which was wonderful.
That's wonderful.
So I feel like I had a little part of Ro, but she's a good gal.
Well, thank you very much.
I don't know, it was for that help show.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. It's very much appreciated. Thank you.